Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Some basketball chatter here. Eastern Conference Finals. Knicks and Pacers get started tonight. Game one of the Western Conference Final last night. Jeremy and Joe. Joe's on vacation this week. Nate is in, and joining us on the Western Hotline is Steve Ashburner, senior writer, NBA.com. Whenever we decide to dip our toes in some NBA waters, we reach out to Steve often, and he's gracious enough to join us once again. Steve, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on.
So, New York, huh? I mean, it's been a long time for anybody to go back there this late in the postseason.
Yeah, that's true. You know, and you can see how giddy their fans are about this opportunity. I think it's a nice matchup, particularly for the Knicks, because they were so banged up when they played Indiana and lost to them in seven games last spring. You know, it really wasn't reflective, I think, of the level of the teams. So now New York, much healthier. Indiana has been tremendous to this point, and I think this one is going to be, you know, really a difficult and a long series.
Getting back to that in a minute, Steve, what's your thought on, you know, sometimes people like to say things like the league likes teams to be in it late or that it's good for the league. And it feels like there was a 10, 15-year conversation about the Knicks and how it would be important and better for the NBA overall if the Knicks were competitive and good. And we've kind of made it to that point, right? That they're not exactly newly competitive. They've been pretty good for a couple of years. But to get this far, are you someone that subscribes to that, that this is just kind of good for the game or it feels good for the NBA?
You know what? I would give that a little bit of a little bit of legitimacy. I think it's too easy to overstate that. I mean, the fact that the Knicks have not been involved in things, you know, hasn't stopped a lot of, you know, attention from being focused on the league. A lot of intriguing matchups and plenty of people across the country being interested in postseason series and ultimately NBA finals. I suppose just by sheer market size, there's something to that. You get more people tuning in. I've never fully understood the need. Now I get it from the broadcast partners. They want their commercials to have the most possible eyeballs to charge the highest rates. Beyond that, though, the idea that if I'm enjoying the NBA finals, I need to know that a bunch of people in New York are also watching it. I don't get that at all. I mean, I don't care if the guy next door is watching it. It's enough for me, and I'm glad it's on. And I don't think there's been any blinking over the idea that we're going to continue to televise these things. So I don't get that worked up over that. To see big ratings and numbers, oh yeah, people are doing what I'm doing. Let's have a little more personal security than that.
Yeah, Steve, you know, interestingly enough, like this playoff for the NBA is going to feature three teams who have never won a championship. The Knicks haven't won one since 1973. And, you know, you went into this playoffs. I know I did as a Knicks fan, Steve. Like, my Knicks buddies in group chats, like, we got to the Boston series and it was like, well, guys, like, maybe they'll win a game. And then they won game one. And then I was like, well, we'll always have game one. And then they won game two and they end up winning that series. And I'm just wondering, going into these playoffs, it was kind of, I don't know, maybe a foregone conclusion that it would be Cleveland-Boston in the finals. Injuries kind of dictated otherwise. What are your thoughts about the state of maybe the league in this final four grouping where you're kind of getting new blood? I know Minnesota was there in the Western Conference Finals last year, so was Indiana, but these are kind of newer teams to the, I guess, general spotlight of the final four.
Well, coming into this season, you'd had six different champions in 6 years. There had not been a repeat champion. There hadn't been anybody who even did it, you know, 2 or 3 years apart. Starting with, I believe, Toronto in 2019. So you know, in a way, it's sort of like you build a machine to produce a widget, and then it starts producing that widget, you know, time after time after time. That's kind of what the NBA salary cap system is. It's designed for parity. And so we're seeing parity. It's much more difficult to build super teams. It's player movement is more difficult, certainly of star players, based on the contracts and the impact in terms of tax hit, luxury tax hit to payrolls. And so everything that the league has done has been pointed toward having as many cities, markets with competitive teams as possible. And now we're seeing the output of that. So this is really not a surprise. This is sort of what's intended. Now, I thought we were going to have a repeat champion this year. I thought the Boston Celtics were the best team in the NBA, however the regular season played out. I mean, Oklahoma City won a few more games. But I thought that the Celtics had the deepest roster. They had the most talent. They were able to go through the regular season sort of, you know, with one arm tied behind their backs. It's like, well, we're not going to play Holiday and Porzingis, but we got plenty without the, you know, with the other guys. Or we're going to sit out, you know, Brown and Derek White. Or they could spot guys in and out, and it really wasn't hurting them. But obviously they had struggles, and the Knicks series was, you know, eye-popping to me, the way they blew those 20-point leads against New York. And then, of course, the Tatum thing just sort of sealed their fate. But no, I think the league, you know, for the most part, I think they like having, you know, the wealth sort of spread around. And the downside, of course, is you don't have dynasties. But when there were dynasties, you know, you had a lot of excited fans in Boston and L.A., Chicago for a stretch. But, you know, the rest of the league sort of had to just sort of sit around, you know, twiddling their thumbs. So I happen to like this better.
I also want to ask you about Tibbs, you know, Tom Thibodeau, the Knicks coach, especially this year, Steve.
Yep.
Got a lot of, I don't know, like criticism for playing his starters as long as he has all year. I mean, they have, I think, four of their starters are top 10 in the league in minutes played and minutes per game. You have the minutes champion in Josh Hart, who basically doesn't come off the court same. I guess I look at who is left. Last year, it was the criticism that by playing his starters too long, they were banged up by the time it mattered in the playoffs. This year, very different story. And the other teams were kind of seeing, and I saw a great article and a great piece of like, maybe Tibbs is onto something. What are your thoughts about, you know, teams that do a lot of sitting their starters and a lot of rest for their star players, where the Knicks, they run their starting five pretty much more than any team in the NBA?
Well, full disclosure here. I mean, I'm firmly in Tom Thibodeau's camp on this. I mean, I've known Tom since he first got a toehold in this league with the Minnesota Timberwolves as an assistant coach in 1989. And I have, you know, I've talked and dealt with other coaches in the meantime, obviously with Tom as well. I really believe the whole minutes thing is overstated. I think that the load management trend got out of control. And I don't know that it necessarily served any good end for the NBA or its players. I think that trying to anticipate fatigue injuries is about as far from an exact science as you can possibly get. What do we see mostly these days? We see these soft tissue non-contact injuries where an Achilles snaps. Mm. Anybody ever say that an Achilles with Damian Lillard or Jason Tatum is related to cumulative minutes over a 6-month period? I don't buy that. I think that wise coaches for decades have regulated, modulated guys' playing time, their minutes, their wear and tear by what they do in between games. I know plenty of veteran coaches who would have essentially walkthroughs on practice days as the season went on because they're not going to burn guys out on a practice court. And so, you know, it's that time in between. You've got, especially in the playoffs, at best you play one game every 48 hours. So what do you do for those other 45 hours in between the games? You know, that to me is every bit as essential as, you know, the wear and tear in a game. Flip Saunders, the late Timberwolves coach, you know, he used to say, are you going to tell me that 5 extra minutes on the floor when a guy is lathered up and loose and in the flow of things and running on adrenaline as much as anything is going to matter. You know, if he's averaging 33 minutes or 38 minutes, you know, as long as there are enough off days in between. Now, if you're playing, you know, four games in five nights, all right, maybe there's a consideration there. But I think by and large, you build up endurance. Everything else that you do in life, certainly athletically, that you increase your stamina through, it tends to be a good thing, right? I mean, you know, you don't prepare to run a marathon by lounging around. I think it's overstated. I think it's a too easy hook with Tom Thibodeau. You know, it's been brought up in Chicago. It was brought up in Minnesota, and obviously now it's been brought up with the Knicks. But I think it's a bunch of hooey. I think that when you get into a playoff atmosphere, you know, teams for decades have shrunk their rotations to seven or eight guys at most, and you know, your frontline players are playing 40 minutes. So I don't have a lot of patience for it. I think it's a cheap tactic.
Steve Ashburner, senior writer, NBA.com, ahead of tonight's game one of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Knicks and the Pacers. On the Pacers side of things, you know, I almost feel like, Steve, we're here in Buffalo, and you know, we're a market seeking its first championship in a major sport. I have a soft spot for a team like the Pacers, where not the biggest market, they're competitive an awful lot, and you know, it feels like it would be great if they made it all the way and won. I'm thinking back to the. For anybody that's watched the NBA for a long time, it's hard not to draw back on the Reggie Miller Pacers and the Knicks back in the late 90s and early 2000s, and just kind of have this spot where, you know, if it's Halliburton that takes over, whatever it is for the Pacers, I think they'd be a good story when this is all said and done.
Well, what I like about Indiana, a couple of things. One, their depth. I think they've really done a great job of roster building there. You know, they don't necessarily have an all-NBA first-team player. Halliburton can bubble up and get that sort of attention, but I don't think that he certainly doesn't carry himself like a star and generally doesn't get treated like, you know, one of the faces of the NBA that we hear so much about. So I think that you know, this saying you get nowadays in the league about guys who are stars in their roles, I think that typifies the Indiana Pacers. They have the division of labor there is very clear cut, and there's some overlap, which is by design in terms of wings who can defend, you know, with Mathurin and Nesmith and even Andrew Nembhard. But, you know, for the most part, guys know their roles. They know the pecking order of that team. It's fairly democratic. Everybody likes to play at a high pace. The way that they are able to put defensive pressure on, you know, up to and including 94 feet, and then immediately shift into a fast break transition kind of an offense, that takes a deep roster. It takes high energy. And, you know, they do it as well as or better than anybody else in the league. So I like Indiana a lot. I've been really impressed. And Carlisle, of course, he's got an NBA title under his belt, and he's won Coach of the Year a couple times. I think that he's a perfect coach for this team as well.
Steve, I want to bring back another point you mentioned a couple of minutes ago about how there's not really those super teams anymore. You know, the you know, Bosh, Wade, and LeBron James. There's not a ton of like these big threes that remain anymore. And I'm curious on your thoughts, because I look at the Final Four in the West, and now in the East between, you know, the Knicks and Pacers, and out West with Oklahoma City and Minnesota, is each team's, you know, kind of quote star is a ball handling guard, all of which can shoot. I'm just wondering now your opinion of the style that's going to maybe win in the NBA is having your best player, you know, maybe outside of, you know, Denver with Jokic. Obviously, he's an unbelievable talent and not a point guard. But these ball dominant guards with shooters and sort of role players and deep benches, is that maybe what you're going to see as the sort of blueprint for NBA franchises that, and maybe does that bring in smaller franchises in smaller markets that maybe can't afford to have, you know, these luxury tax rosters where you've just got tons of these, you know, not necessarily star players, but expensive players?
Well, I don't know that I'm following you 100%. I mean, I think there's always been a dominant player, a guy who handles the ball a lot. It used to be LeBron for the teams he's been on. I mean, sometimes it's been a non-point guard. I think it's just sort of a coincidence. I mean, Anthony Edwards is a shooting guard. You know, I don't know that I don't really see a pattern there. I think that you know, to me, it's the way that these guys came up organically within their teams. Anthony Edwards was the number one pick because Minnesota stunk, and, you know, they happened to nail the number one pick right that year. You know, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, I mean, he sort of was a happy result of a Paul George trade that the Clippers gave him up. And you know, I remember up until a couple of years ago, the thought was that Oklahoma City, you know, they've got all the surrounding pieces. They've got the role players. They will eventually use some of those, you know, trade assets, those draft picks that they have stockpiled, and then they'll bring in a star who'll be the straw that stirs the drink. Well, he emerged from within, and that accelerated the Thunder's timeline with the SGA emerging as that guard. I mean, Brunson should have been re-signed by the Dallas Mavericks. The fact that they did not do that, you know, it looks now like one of the major gaffes. I mean, they sort of gave up on other guys too. I mean, Porzingis was another guy, and could be that Doncic will be that guy too. And you know, most of us would say that was a mistake to get rid of him. So, you know, he ended up becoming this leader of a team and all NBA quality MVP, you know, considered player in New York, sort of on his own and within that system. And then Halliburton in Indiana, the same thing. He was part of a pivotal trade, you know, two good players swapping teams. Domantas Sabonis, who's a double-double kind of machine and continued that in Sacramento, and Tyrese Halliburton, who was sort of a young guy on the come. But again, I don't think people thought Halliburton would be the player that he is. So I don't see a real pattern there. I just think that it's refreshing to know that it wasn't simply a free agent purchase that bought somebody a ticket to the conference finals at this point.
Steve Ashburner, NBA.com senior writer. Steve, thanks very much for the time. Always a pleasure. Always glad to have you on. And enjoy this Eastern Conference final series.
Yeah, you too. You're welcome.
All right, Steve Ashburner, NBA.com senior writer. One other basketball note for you, Nate, here. Which, by the way, I want to get your thoughts on the Knicks and your prediction, your vibes. You're a big Knicks fan. You got to explain to people that might not know what Bing Bong is. Before that, one other basketball note. UB tweeted yesterday, made it official. Turner Battle named GM for UB men's basketball. Now, I will effort to get Turner on the show soon to talk about that and, of course, share his greatest memories of playing on the same court with me in a rec league.
Oh, okay.
I was on Turner's team. Turner was on my team. I'm close friends with his wife's family, the Hell Side, some of my oldest friends in Buffalo, and you know, we played together. It's pretty great. He was pretty great. I was on the court.
Yeah, no, he's so.
Have you ever done that? Owen, you'd have a good like
play rec league.
But you were also obviously way better at the said sport that I'm going to say I was a basketball. Where you're on the same court with one of the like top 1% of people that have ever done it. To be on the court with Turner Battle, rec league, we're playing at Nichols, and you know. Just like pass over to Turner, he elevates for a three. And you're like, oh,
yeah,
oh,
like you're just a passenger. Yeah, you are a passenger.
I do have a really good story about my first sort of experience venture into high level hockey. Like after AAA, I got drafted to Sault Ste. Marie in the OHL, and I went up for rookie camp and did well enough that I got invited to main camp. So like I'm at training camp with all these guys. And Barrett Hayton had just gone fifth overall to the Coyotes the year before. Mm-hmm. He's on Sault Ste. Marie. And we do this big, it's called the red and white scrimmage at the end of training camp. It's like the final cuts, play this scrimmage, fans come in. And, you know, they do a shootout at the end of those every time just to, you know, give the fans something to sort of have fun with. And I stopped the first two shootout attempts, and then I see Hayton get off the bench, and I'm like, ugh, this might be tough. This guy's like just got picked in the top five of the league. Like I am 16 and have never been around anybody this good. And he came down, and I made the decision before he even touched the puck. Like, I'm going to poke check him. I'm going to get him. Like I'm going to go at him, yeah. And I'm going to get him. He got to the top of the circle, and I think I probably moved my blocker a millimeter before he recognized, oh, he's going to try and poke check me. And audibly, like, to where you could hear it in, I'm sure fans could hear it, laughed as he shot the puck five hole and just, like, clink in the back of the net. I'm left there standing, not even, like, frozen, not even moving. Hayton laughs before the puck's even in the back of the net.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's a lot of those moments. Byfield got me once really good, too, on L.A. When I was 15. That was fun. But there's always time. Like, you can always see it, no matter how where you are. Those top, like, elite 1% guys are just – they're freaks. They all
– Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All are. Yes, they are. And I'll say this about Turner Battle. It would have been Reggie Witherspoon and Jim Kwitroff was the assistant coach.
Yep.
Jim's a very good friend of my dad's. I used to do the UB basketball camp every summer. And this would have been, you know, middle school to high school. All the players of those teams would be at the camp and they'd be the counselors and the coaches. And then you would separate, team up, and then play scrimmages. And it was like, probably my favorite part of every summer was that camp.
Yep.
And so I became very, like, I was a big fan of those teams, the Turner Battle teams, like Rod Middleton. I remember a lot of names from those teams.
They were so fun that
because team. I was going to 7 games a year, and like that was the most success the school had ever had.
Yep.
Under that program. So yeah, like that name, Turner, hits.
One thing about, and when we get to talking to UB about this news a little later on, you know, maybe later this week or next week or whenever, the new kind of created role in collegiate sports of general manager, to me, makes total sense. You know, you've got athletic programs with athletic directors, and they've got what? A lot on their plate. You're an athletic director. You have all the sports, and these sports are obviously money machines, and like how many people in the entire sport. And then to have, let me just have a general manager for basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Like that makes so much sense to me to have someone with their eyes that, again, is played and like to have played in the program. Like I think it makes a lot of sense throughout college sports. We're starting to see this role been created.
It's almost becoming more important than the head coach.
Yeah.
Because in reality, I don't think it's very possible for these head coaches to be
general managers.
To be recruiters be the coach.
It seems like it's a really organically created spot in the new landscape of college sports.
With the NIL,
yeah,
right.
That makes a ton of sense. 803-0550 is our phone number. Diane Orsini reports the Tush Bush expected to be banned. Are you ready for the fantasy football fallout? You want to trade for Jalen Hurts while you can right now? Everyone thinks, Tush Push is gone.
Oh, that's right. All his value is gone.
Tush Push is gone. Oh, you want to unload Hurts? You want to trade for Hurts? What do you want to do? Tush Push time?
I'd trade for him.
I also would. 803-0550. He's still pretty good. And I bet they still sneak him in from the one. They just don't push it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Where are all the stories that he squats 500 pounds?
I've got no concerns.
That doesn't change.
Just as much success without the Tush Push.
Yeah. 803-0550 is our phone number. Jeremy and Joe. Joe's out this week. He's on vacation. Nate's in today. Hang out. 803-0550 on WGR.
Sammy, I didn't want to say this in front of the others, but you know what I think the most important thing in life is? It's love. You want to know what I love?
Beer, Norm?
Yeah, I'm a quick one. Sammy, I love that stool. If there's a heaven, I don't want to go there unless my stool is waiting for me. And I'll tell you what, even God better not be on it.
You wouldn't dare.
I don't think it matters what you love, Sammy. Could be a person, could be a thing. As long as you love it totally, completely, without judgment. You know what I think? I think you ought to go home and wake up Vera with a big kiss and then do what comes naturally. Wake her up so she can watch me eat a bucket of buffalo wings? Maybe not. Well, I'm off.
George Wendt passed away yesterday. A couple quick things in there about Cheers. You guys might all be too young for Cheers to a degree. When you're listening to that, you know that's Norm from Cheers. Mm-hmm. Does anyone else hear Kyle Brandt?
No.
Okay. If you want to play his voice again, I hear Kyle Brandt in his voice. And then I checked real quick. George Wendt is from Chicago.
Oh, okay.
Kyle Brandt is from
Chicago.
Chicago.
And by the way, I did definitely know he was from Chicago.
Yeah. So he does the Bears
the
thing.
The Bears. Right?
But yeah. I just hear Kyle Brandt's voice in there.
Sammy, I didn't want to say this in front of the others, but you know what I think the most important thing in life is?
Anyway, I just think that's Kyle Brandt to a degree. A little dialect.
I hear it right there.
Yeah. Just a little bit of... Anyway, that's near the here and there. I never thought of that until right now. So George Wendt, I learned a couple things about George Wendt yesterday. I didn't know Jason Sudeikis is his nephew.
I didn't know that either.
How about that?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. And then this one is really interesting. So we already had our stat of the day. Here's another stat of the day. On May 20th, by the way, the Cheers finale would have been yesterday. The anniversary of the Cheers finale is yesterday.
Oh, wow.
May 20th, 1993.
Wow, that's crazy.
Right?
Yeah. That's pretty crazy.
I remember the Cheers finale. The whole thing makes me think I should rewatch Cheers as a show. Just do it start to finish, rewatch it. Because when that show is on, it's late 80s, early 90s. I'm not of an age where I can totally appreciate the humor of adults talking at a bar. I probably thought it was kind of cool and liked it to a degree. I remember the finale. The finale was, everybody's walking out saying goodbye and... they close the door and somebody walks down the stairs and Sam yells to the door, like, we're closed, we're closed. And the guy walks away. You never know who that is. It's like trying to come in the bar. Anyway, on May 20th, 1993, I did not know this. And here's a newspaper clipping. People went to the Sky Dome in Toronto to watch the finale.
Wow.
On the world's largest jumbotron at the time. In an attempt to set the world record, 33,000 people watched the Cheers finale
together
at the Sky Dome.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
And when they saw Norm on the TV, the stadium yelled, Norm, for George Wendt's appearance. Pretty cool.
That is very cool. Yeah, Cheers would have been a show sort of like Seinfeld for me that was on TV a lot. That would have been on my TV, but me not really fully understand even really what I was watching. I just, not necessarily similar humor, but like you said, like adults at the bar. I thought it was cool, and I can't tell you that I really remember a lot of episodes, but I remember sort of like that's when I started liking Ted Danson.
Yeah.
It's a great show. I agree with you. It's maybe one of those, maybe I'll...
No one ever talks about that rewatch, right? Rewatches are always
The Office.
Sopranos or, maybe. I think about Sopranos, Breaking Bad. People watch dramas a second, third, fourth time. Is Cheers in syndication anywhere? Is syndication even a thing anymore because everything is just streamed? You could just probably go, is the full Cheers library somewhere?
I'm sure like Hulu.
Hulu.
They've got every
and
old
Paramount
show.
Plus.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Norm, though. But, it was funny because yesterday I was talking about this, and I'm like, what did he put? Like, obviously Cheers, but I'm like, he did another role that I think of him for that wasn't Cheers, and I couldn't remember it. And then it came to me. I was like, it's the Bears. Like, it was the SNL skit with him, Chris Farley. Who would have been the other two in that?
Mike Myers.
Yes, Mike
John
Myers.
John Goodman, I think, or no.
The fourth guy is like a lesser name.
Yes.
Da Bears Guys.
Da Bears Guys.
Bill Swirsky's Superfans
yes.
is the name of it.
Yep.
It was Robert Schmeigel. He's the other guy that okay. like maybe you don't. And Joe Mantegna. Mantegna. I don't know who that is.
Really, to me, that's like his iconic role for me.
Norm?
Yes.
So it's that more than it's...
Then Cheers. But I'm...
But he wasn't he more of a... He was a cameo on the Bears. He wasn't there every week.
He wasn't there
but,
every
no,
week?
No, the Superfans... Yeah, Bill Swirsky's Superfans. It was... They would have guests. Yeah, I guess Bob Swirsky, he was Bill's brother in the show.
Yes.
All the stuff about the Ditkas and the mini Ditkas.
Yes, the mini Ditkas, the Polish sausage yeah. with Chris Farley, you know, going into cardiac arrest.
Always funny.
Yes.
Always funny. Yeah. Back in the day when we would rush home to watch
to
television
watch a show.
Live on TV.
Yep.
Yeah. 803-0550.
Does not happen anymore.
What else is Norm in? George Went. Cheers, the Bears, the Swirsky Superfans, and is he in a movie? Is he somewhere?
Yeah, he's definitely in movies.
Somewhere.
Right?
Somewhere in a movie. He showed up in House. He showed up in, a Chevy Chase movie with Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Fletch. He was in Fletch.
Okay. Jay in Hamilton. Hey, Jay, what's up?
Hey, yeah. It's funny, the George Went thing, when I found out that he was Sudeikis' uncle, that was freaky. And then he actually passed yesterday on the final episode of that Cheers episode. It's just very fitting for an incredible character. It's funny, the Cheers episode, when you mentioned that, Jeremy, I had to look it up real quick on my phone, and the CBC did a piece on this. And I remember at the time it was happening, I couldn't go because I broke my leg and I couldn't really get around. So I ended up watching it with my ex-girlfriend at the time at home watching it. But watching that CBC episode, seeing all the people together and the diversity of the crowd, right? Every walk of life was there to take in a show that I think, Cheers, was the predominant a formulaic kind of show that set the standard for the other shows. If you think about shows going forward, I love that we're talking about this on a sports radio show. It's why I love you guys.
Thanks.
The fact that you look at big shows like Seinfeld and stuff. Where did Seinfeld usually take place? In the apartment or at the diner?
Yeah.
And Cheers was about that one singular place, right?
Yep.
And the way that thing came together and the way the characters developed, what made that show incredible was writing. And that's one of the things that I think we miss in some of the shows nowadays. So Cheers just provided for me as a young 19-year-old, 20-year-old growing up watching that show to give us such an attachment to something that we will not see. You're not going to see 80 million people watching a show coming together like that. And I'm proud to be a part of that and to see a guy like George Went have that kind of and embrace that character, which some people don't. I think it's incredible. And it's a sad loss. But there's just so much to that show that gave everything that we have now. And it fills my heart, and I'm saddened for his family. But it's incredible. Keep talking, guys.
Thanks, Jay. Thanks very much. Yeah, the term sometimes you'll hear for this is monoculture, where, finger quotes, everybody's watching a show.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Seinfeld and Friends maybe and Game of Thrones and Sopranos. And, you know, some shows kind of get to that space of now that we have stream everything and you can binge everything, right? Instead of, hey, are you going to watch tonight's episode of this? The question you'll ask is, hey, have you guys watched, because I finished the whole series.
Yep.
Have you watched the miniseries on Karen Reed
mm-hmm.
that's on, and then pick your, there's a million different streaming things. I learn about a new show every day.
Yep.
I learned about a new show this week. My wife is watching The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives.
Ah.
Didn't know about that.
Sure.
Secret Lives of Mormon Wives.
It's actually like The Bear is going to come out. Season 4 is going to come out June 25th. And I'm going to watch every episode in 3 days.
Right. That's so different.
It is so different.
Than a serial show.
Yep.
That's what Game of Thrones, that's what the traditional HBO style gives you, is like every week, here's the next episode. And Game of Thrones was that, and Sopranos was that. I'm probably forgetting a bunch of other ones that are like this.
Like for me, it's like Prison Break and 24. Those
24
network
is a
television.
Right. 24 is a good one that had a little window in there. There's a show mentioned here I want to bring up that had a little run like this as well. But the whole idea is everybody was going to watch. The Cheers finale is tonight. And then afterwards, it's everyone talking about what it meant.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Seinfeld finale where, you know, everybody comes back, they're in the courtroom in that small little town. Like, well, what'd you think? How'd you like it? Did it do justice to this show? Because they decide how to end things.
Yeah.
Lost was a monoculture show.
Yes.
Lost was
yes,
everybody.
Yes, it was.
At the start, Survivor was this.
Mm-hmm.
Survivor was, I used to listen to this station in the morning, and they would do post-game shows about the episode of Survivor.
Yeah.
Like, what'd you think last night? Why'd they get voted out? Well, the alliances, like, it was such a moment.
The other point the caller made, too, about it being like the traditional sitcom where it's live studio audience, basically there's one setting.
Yeah.
Like, The Office is like that, right? Where it's just this unique one setting. There are very few shows like that anymore.
That just stay in one place, yeah.
That you can come up with enough creative plots to just have one.
Yeah, and one thing I think that you would say would be similar from The Office and Cheers, and Seinfeld did this as well. They introduce you to, like, what, four really core characters,
mm-hmm.
and then there are other characters you're going to meet along the way.
Yep.
And for Cheers, that was, you know, it's Sam and Carla and Norm and Cliff and Woody, and then Frasier, of course, and Lilith, and, like, the people that come in and, you know.
Frasier, wow.
Right, yeah. Frasier was Cheers. I got a tweet here from Michael. Rewatching Cheers is a must. I did it years ago, locked in my room for 10 days with COVID. Appreciate it more now than in my younger days. It's on Hulu. Yeah, a Cheers rewatch might be the kind of thing that I just, or I might find it, you know, am I going to be bored by it now? I don't know. Maybe not. Anyway, shout out Cheers, I guess. Now what's the monoculture moment now? What is it now? It's the NFL. That really
it is the NFL.
The NFL has become the everybody watches this thing throughout. Watch the season. You see this week, it's broken down a million different ways. Today there'll be, you know, nonstop coverage of tush push and seed changes, and you know we're a part of that. Extendo Sports coming up, and then the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show here on WGR.
Breaking sports news airs first here, guaranteed. WGR Sports Radio 550, 2020 Sports.
Extendo Sports.
All right, two notes for Extendo today, both NFL notes. I'll get this one updated. The Lions withdrew its playoff seeding proposal. So what we talked about all morning about the pros, the potential cons of the NFL reseeding its playoffs has been tabled. And one note is that this is something the league might take a look at again in the future when it adds an 18th game, which pretty much guarantees the NFL is going to expand the schedule one more time from 17 to 18 games. And when that change happens, likely a change in playoff seeding will follow. But you had a good one, Josh.
Yeah, this just came across
Your desk.
Came across the desk here. A lovely quote from the mayor of Cleveland giving, I guess, an insight on how things are with the Cleveland Browns. Talking on the Browns potentially leaving Cleveland, he says, quote, "There are more important priorities than the Cleveland Browns."
That's a quote.
It certainly is. That's just, it's not something you want to hear if you're the Browns, right? Like, it kind of shows you just the way the city views them, maybe.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting quote from the mayor of the city in which you have an NFL team. Having said that, I don't know how many Browns fans right now maybe disagree.
Yeah, that's fair.
But they do need a new stadium. Like, that's got to happen.
Right.
The Cleveland Browns. All right, that does it for me this week. Jeremy back tomorrow. I believe he'll be with Sal. So tune in then. Up next, the Extra Point Show. You guys ripping today?
Derek and Zach.
All right, coming up next on the Extra Point Show.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.